people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the right side of me. Yeah, walking on the right side of me. Running down. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me. Yeah, walking on the right beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. We are in an increasing, almost Red Guard orgy of political correctness up here in the Dominion of Canada. You have to wonder, you know, both my parents served in the Second World War. They joined up out of patriotism, and in a general belief that they were going to build a better world. And many of their generation joined the armed forces with similarly idealistic goals. Yeah, you know, they felt that what they were doing was going to be for the betterment of humanity. They didn't join for bad reasons. Well, okay. What has become of their organization, the Legion? At several legions across the country over the past few years, nationalistic meetings have been canceled on being informed by the usual anti-free speech suspects that these people were haters or something like that. The Legion dutifully canceled. And, you know, when one says, well, what did you think you were fighting for? Yeah, you know, in a general way, in the propaganda of the time, they'd been told that Adolf Hitler was a terrible dictator and he was going to conquer the world. Well, you know, even at the time, that had to be BS. He wasn't. Adolf Hitler didn't have the means, it turned out, even to conquer Russia when fighting on two fronts. Not that there weren't great military deeds done, but it just wasn't in the cards that he was going to conquer the world. Adolf Hitler posed absolutely no threat to Canada. He didn't. But many of my parents' generation, I think, in kind of an idealistic way, thought, "Well, we're fighting for human rights and better institutions, okay? And wouldn't that include freedom of speech? I mean, you think it would, wouldn't it? Okay. Well, now what's happening? And I've warned for years." And others like Barbara Kalashka, that if we don't all stick together on the free speech front, we will be picked off one by one. I'm going to get back to the Legion in a moment. But back in the 90s, the late 90s, 1997 to actually 2002, we fought a huge free speech battle with the Canadian Human Rights Commission over a website called the Zundel site. Now, Art Sundel, primarily the woman who would become his wife, Ingrid Rimland, had a website. It was located in the United States, and they published a lot of material on revisionism. Anyway, the usual suspects in this case, let's see, the Canadian Jewish Congress, the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, the Friends of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and a particularly nasty baggage, from the Holocaust Remembrance Society, whose names temporarily slips my mind. Anyway, later complained against them, and these hearings went on for the better part of, I think, 50 sessions over 5 years. And there were considerable delays for complicated legal reasons. At that time, intervening on the behalf of the Circle was the CAFE, my group, the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And at the time, Barbara Kalashka, who was one of Ernst Sundel's lawyers, sought help from other groups like Real Women of Canada, and they're a conservative Christian group who believe in the traditional role of women. And already we could see the future, that they would go after what you might call the low-hanging fruit. Somebody that the media had smeared as a new Nazi, namely Ernst Sundel, or a Holocaust denier. And these are smear words. Holocaust denier. I don't know of any real Holocaust denier in the sense of somebody, the way it's understood by most people. And a Holocaust denier would sound to be somebody who says no Jews died in World War II. You know, so if you supposedly deny the Holocaust, you're saying Jews didn't die. Well, I don't know anybody who says that. Jews did die. Some Jews were murdered. But anyway, Ernst Sundel had been thoroughly smeared and demonized. But what we were trying to do was to get a group of other people who had a concern about free speech to intervene. That is, in American terms, you'd be called an amicus curiae, or a friend of the court. Well, Barbara Kalashka worked very hard to get a group like Real Women on side. And she didn't have much success. They understood, what Barbara was basically saying was, look, they're coming after Ernst Sundel today because he's an easy target. He's being demonized. But that might be happening, that will happen to you too. Because we know that the Christian haters and the abortion fanatics, and the psychobilly radical feminists have a very low opinion of groups like yours. And they will want to try to crush you when they can. So why don't we fight them on the Zundel front before you end up having to fight them on your front? Well, they said, well, yeah, they sort of got it, but they didn't want to be associated with a neo-Nazi. Well, okay, we went on and we lost. Many people would be crushed by those and similar legislation. Regularly, pro-life groups are banned on campus by other radical students, or severely limited or harassed. People who have criticized homosexuality, like my good friend Bill Watcott. He's been dragged before the several human rights tribunals. He lost in Saskatchewan. That case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and essentially he lost. Last December, found guilty or responsible by the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal for having put out a leaflet during the 2017 provincial election in British Columbia, particularly in the riding of Vancouver Falls Creek, targeting a certain Ronan Auger, who calls himself Morgan. And Ronan Auger is a transgender thingy, and he's a big spokesman for the transgender community and a lobbyist, etc., etc. He was running for the Socialist New Democratic Party, and he had a pretty good chance of winning. And Bill Watcott's leaflet pointed out that basically Auger is deluded. That the Bible says there are only two sexes, man and woman, and then he, on the other side of the pamphlet, Centers for Disease Control, he had material explaining that homosexual practice is medically a problem. Such lovely things as genital warts, anal warts, anal cancer, and well, anyway, you got the picture. He was complained about for having shown for prejudice against this poor transgender thingy, and in the end, he was convicted and fined $55,000. So what we were trying to argue is the monster of cultural Marxist censorship is never satisfied. They will start with the obvious, but in the end they will come after many others. Okay, this is the long way back to the Legion. It never should have happened. Royal Canadian Legion probes why. Rebel news event held at a Toronto branch. Now, before we go any further, let's be quite clear what Rebel News is. Rebel News is an online TV news program, channel, run by Ezra Levant. Now, if that name sounds Jewish to you, you're right. Ezra Levant's a Jew. He's a Zionist. He also has a peculiar belief in freedom of speech. Not all the way, unfortunately, but Ezra Levant has quite, to give him his due, has done a lot battling for free speech in Canada. He's a scrappy guy. He also, his channel has done some very good work on exposing Canada's immigration invasion. So Ezra Levant, has done some good work. Okay, now listen to what goes on here. 3 months after instituting a policy barring its chapters from affiliating with groups known to promote hate, the Royal Canadian Legion says it's investigating why one of its Toronto chapters hosted a Rebel News a book event, saying it should never have happened. Now, do you see what is being said? Ezra Levant, pro-freedom, immigration critic, scrappy, out-there sort of journalist, is apparently a group known to promote hate. Well, let's take the legal aspect of this. Has Ezra Levant ever been charged under Canada's notorious hate law, Section 319 of the Criminal Code? No. Has he ever been convicted? Well, obviously not. He hasn't been charged. He hasn't been convicted. So what's this all about? You see, this is the insanity of a world where hate is whatever somebody says it is. On Wednesday evening, the Legion's North York chapter, Branch 66, hosted a signing for a book authored by Rebel News head and Rebel and Rebel Commander Ezra Levant, and the book was called The Libranos, you know, sort of like The Sopranos, suggesting that the Trudeau government are kind of left-wing tax-crazy gangsters, which is actually true. Ahead of the event, the Legion's National Headquarters responded to tweets voicing concern over the planned event. This goes against our anti-hate policy, and the provincial commands have been notified, the Legion tweeted. Our anti-hate policy. Isn't that anti-dissent? Isn't that anti-politically correct policy? And that's what you guys died for, although I don't think any of the people who are actively involved in the Legion right now were in World War II. But, is that what Canadian soldiers went overseas for? To create a country where you couldn't speak your mind? But what you say, wasn't that the very sort of thing they were told the other side did? The event went ahead anyway, despite a new policy institute after one of its Alberta chapters was found to have counted a number of far-right group soldiers of Odin among its ranks. What? Oh, no! Well, once again, even if you grant that the soldiers of Odin are far-right, whatever that means, isn't membership of the Legion open now to anybody who was a member of the armed forces? And because there are so few, and the legions are empty of members, if you could, if parents was a member of the armed forces, see, I mean, I could join the Legion if I wanted to, but I don't have the time to sit around with a bunch of old drunks. In June, the CBC News reported that about half a dozen members of the group, Nations of Odin, an offshoot of a neo-Nazi organization with the same name in Finland, had signed up with the Grand Prairie Alberta branch, which had also rented a hall to the Soldiers of Odin for a community Easter dinner. Wouldn't you just say, so what? And notice, of course, that that's the CBC editorializing that the Soldiers of Odin were a neo-Nazi group. Well, let me put it this way. Even if they were, and they're not, but even if they were, why shouldn't they be allowed to hold meetings? Or to join you if they otherwise qualify? Why not? Well, what if they'd be members of the Communist Party? You know, there were members of the Canadian Armed Forces in the Second World War who were active communists. Shouldn't they be... why should these people be discriminated against? See what I mean? Okay. In response, the National Legion instituted the policy stating in part, no branch or command within the Legion may affiliate itself in any manner whatsoever with a group or organization that promotes or is known to promote hatred or violence due to ethnicity, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or any other social determinant, whatever that means. This also applies to Legion support of groups affiliated with organizations that espouse hostility. What does that mean? The Legion, no branch, it says, may affiliate itself in any manner whatsoever. What does that mean? The Legion doesn't usually endorse things. So what does affiliate mean? Does it mean rent space too? I guess. To any group that is known to promote hatred or violence, what does that mean? You mean somebody's accused them of promoting hatred on any of these privileged groups, right? Religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or any other social determinant. I mean, that's so broad you could ban just about anybody. The policy goes on to say that it's up to the branch and provincial executives to use their best judgment to ensure policy compliance. The national headquarters makes the final determination as to what constitutes a prohibited group, it says. Unbelievable. You know, that's basically whatever some unelected person up at the top of the Legion decides is the case. At issue is whether Rebel News constitutes such a group, something Ezra Levant vehemently denied in an email to the CBC. Well, I don't think you even have to have Ezra Levant's denial. Have they ever been charged? No. Have they? Obviously, they haven't been convicted. So hate group is only a term of abuse. Then. It has no rational basis. Quote, I have no idea what could possibly be called hateful about our book launch last night. I looked at the policy referred to, and it clearly doesn't apply to us. We don't promote hatred or violence. Levant added many of Rebel's news personalities are members of the Legion, and none of them had been advised personally of any such investigation. We were warmly welcomed last night, that's last week in Toronto, as we always are, and I expect we always will be. He said Rebel News held a Legion event in Calgary just one night before the Toronto event, and we will have more coming up. The North York, the Legion's North York branch declined to explain why the event was allowed to go ahead. Well, let me put it a different way. Why shouldn't it be allowed to go ahead? A day later, Branch 66 President Stephen Davis followed up with an email to CBC News. In it, he said, the branch's policies are in keeping and consistent with Royal Canadian Legion protocols, adding, the only published banned groups individual by the Royal Canadian Legion I'm aware of are motorcyclists wearing club crests on their clothing and certain identifiable extremist groups with whom I have no knowledge or have interacted with at any time. Okay, so they don't want bikers wearing their patches and identifiable extremist groups with whom I have no knowledge. This guy isn't exactly a master of the English language. Once again, I would ask, well what are identifiable extremist groups? What's extremist? In a tweet Thursday afternoon, the Legion said its provincial command is investigating why the event was allowed to go forward. It never should have happened, as it is contrary to our anti-hate policy and the purposes and objectives of the Legion. So basically, the provincial command in Ontario is saying that Rebel News is a hate group. Spokesperson Nujma Bond, N-U-J-M-A. What's that? What war did Nujma fight in? Confirmed an investigation is ongoing, but at the moment there's no estimate of when it'll be completed. We take these matters very seriously and are going to reiterate the anti-hate policy to our branches through additional communications. Once the command provides details of the investigation, we will share. Asked specifically how Rebel News violated its policy, the Legion said simply, it was a group or organization that promotes or is known to promote hatred or violence due to ethnicity, religion, gender, or sexual orientation. I think Ezra Levant should seriously consider suing the Legion for libel. It was, that's the Rebel News, a group or organization that promotes or is known to promote hatred or violence due to ethnicity, religion, gender, or sexual orientation. That's a lie. That's a lie, and it's a libel. And it is scary that mental midgets like this are allowed to make decisions. And I suspect it might be hard in the future for the Rebel News to rent a Legion. Of course, Levant goes on to say that our staff is multiracial. To equate us with neo-Nazis is absurd. We've never been alt-right. I put it a little differently. Even if they were, why shouldn't they have a right to rent from the Legion? And that is some of what this battle is all about. Oh my gosh. Guilty verdict in Edmonton truck attack. Well, this is an incident that goes way back to 2017. An Edmonton police officer tried to stop to investigate a car. His name was Mike Chernick, and he was the driver of the car, tried to run him down, actually knocked him down, then got out of the car and started stabbing him with a knife. Now, a number of the knife blows were hit the officer's bulletproof vest and didn't do too much damage. They tried to stab him in the face. When the officer beat him off, he then fled, hijacked a U-Haul, and careened through the city of Edmonton and knocked down four more people. Luckily, none of them was killed. Anyway, he was finally convicted on last Friday. A jury on Friday found him guilty of five counts of attempted murder, along with aggravated assault against the officer, criminal flight causing bodily harm, and dangerous driving. Oh yes, I didn't mention who he was. His name was Abdullahi Hassan Sharif. Abdullahi Hassan Sharif. I don't think that boy was born in County Wexford. No, he wasn't. Sharif, a 32-year-old Somali refugee, represented himself at the three-week hearing, etc. And obviously did a pretty bad job, but that's good. Okay, let's backtrack. Somali refugee. How did he get into Canada? Well, I don't have an answer for you, but I think Canadians have a right to know. Wait a sec. How did this homicidal loony bin get into Canada? Oh, was he checked? Okay. Now, is he a Canadian citizen? That's not yet established, but I don't think he is. Well, if he isn't, when his sentence is complete, and the sentencing is coming up, but when his sentence is complete, will he be deported? Well, he should be deported, but will he be? Oh, yeah, though it gets even better. Police found an ISIL flag in the car used to strike Chernin. Now that's the Islamic Islamic League of the Levant. They're terrorists, ISIL. Then Edmonton Police Chief Rod Necht said they were investigating the incidents as act of terrorism. The details made international news. However, the Crown never brought any terrorism-related charges, and the word terrorism was never uttered in front of the jury. As usual, this stuff is played down. Was this a terrorist attack? Well, we haven't been given enough information, I suppose, to really know. But it certainly suggests that it might have been, in terms of motivation. I mean, this guy did a lot of damage. For what? For what reason? Anyway, it's to be hoped that at the very least, when he is after he serves his sentence, that he will be deported. I mean, that's what's really important. Get rid of the guy. Here is something that there's a question I've already asked, but it's one that I think we really must demand an answer to. And that is, how did this guy get into Canada? He's a refugee. Well, he says he's a refugee. Was he ever checked for anything else? And maybe there's good reason why he should never have been allowed in. Refugees sometimes say, well, you must consider me as a refugee. Things are kind of hot for me in my homeland. Now, that might be for acceptable for bad reasons. It might also be because the person has behaved badly. And if the fellow is a mental case in Somalia, what's he doing here? Why should we allow him in as a refugee? Here's an interesting bit of Canadiana about the Green Party. And Actually, I think I will skip that. Because what I was actually looking for was Warren Kinsella, who was briefly hired by the Green Party, supposedly to protect their leader's image. excuse me. idealists in the Green Party were so upset that a man who'd been a long-time hatchet man for the Liberal Party, and had once called himself the Prince of Darkness, was actually going to be doing PR work for the Green Party. And you know, there are many people in the Green Party who are idealistic. I don't necessarily agree with their ideals, but and they felt that, well, this is just plain wrong. I mean, he's not our kind of guy. And it appears that Kinsella only lasted about, it may have been only a week with the Liberal Party, sorry, with the Green Party before, well, depending on whom you're listening to, he either, his job was done, which seemed like a fairly short contract, or party leader Elizabeth May gave in to the widespread concerns about Warren Kinsella and decided to drop him. But be that as it may, he was no longer an advisor to them. Something interesting on the Kinsella line has occurred, and that is that Kinsella's wife is setting up a new company. And some of our friends who watch these matters are wondering, well, does that mean Kinsella's company, the two of them have another company called Daisy Group. I was laughing at that, you know, Daisy Group, like Daisy Chain. I don't know, that's their name, not mine. Daisy Group. Well, okay. Well, now Lisa is setting up something called a new firm of her own called Blackbird Strategies. More information to come. She's now using her middle name, and it's I'll get that here for you. Lisa Kirby Kinsella. And my good friend Lawrence McCurry says, well, it appears that Lisa Kinsella is now using her middle name and has started a new firm of her own called Blackbird Strategies. With not a care in the world, Lisa has blown off all the people who were working for her and Warren, or has she blown them off? And is starting over. It's also being speculated, perhaps, Warren, their previous company, may be sued, and she wants to get out while the getting's good. Dr. James Sears says, is it because Warren knows he's going to be sued and will lose, so all the clients are going to be transferred to her alone? And a Persian friend of ours says, a proverb in Farsi says, you can't find even one straight intestine in the belly of these two. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens on the Kinsella front. I wanted to. There's an excellent piece in the UNS report about why the Germans invaded Poland in 1939. There's been a lot of misinformation, hoping we can get this for you to kind of set the the record straight. And it seems to have temporarily disappeared on us. Oh, yes, here we are. Why Germany Invaded, and this is by John Ware. this is an article in the UNS report in the United States. March 21st, 1939, while hosting French Prime Minister Edouard Daladier, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain discussed a joint front with France, Russia, and Poland to act together against German aggression. France agreed at once, and the Russians agreed on the condition that both France and Poland sign first. However, Polish Foreign Minister Józef Beck vetoed the agreement on March 24th. Polish statesman, March 24, 1939. Polish statesmen feared Russia more than they did Germany. Polish Marshal Edward Smigli-Rist told the French ambassador, "With the Germans, we risk losing our liberty. With the Russians, we lose our soil." And that's, of course, what would happen later. Another complication arose in European diplomacy when a movement among the residents of Memel in Lithuania sought to join Germany. That was actually, they were ethnic Germans. The Allied victors in the Versailles Treaty had detached Memel from East Prussia and placed it in a separate League of Nations protectorate. Lithuania then proceeded to seize Memel from the League of Nations shortly after World War I. Memel was historically a German city, which in the seven centuries of its history had never separated from its East Prussian homeland. Germany was so weak after World War I that it could not prevent the tiny newborn nation of Lithuania from seizing Memel. You probably hadn't heard about that, had you? Germany's occupation of Prague in March 1939 had generated uncontrollable excitement among the mostly German population of Memel. The population of Memel was clamoring to return to Germany and could no longer be restrained. The Lithuanian foreign minister traveled to Berlin on March 22, 1939, where he agreed to immediately transfer Memel to Germany. The annexation of Memel into Germany went through the next day. The question of Memel exploded of itself without any deliberate German plan of annexation. Polish leaders agreed that the return of Memel to Germany from Lithuania would not constitute an issue of conflict between Germany and Poland. What did cause conflict? What did cause conflict between Germany and Poland was the so-called Free City of Danzig, or the Poles called Gdansk. Danzig was founded in the early 14th century and historically was the key port at the mouth of the Great Vistula River. From the beginning, Danzig was inhabited almost exclusively by Germans, with the Polish minority in 1922 constituting less than 3% of the city's 365,000 inhabitants. The Treaty of Versailles converted Danzig from a German provincial capital into a League of Nations protectorate, subject to numerous strictures established for the benefit of Poland. The great preponderance of the cities of Danzig never wanted to leave Germany, and they were eager to return to Germany in 1939. Their eagerness to join Germany was exacerbated by the fact that the German economy was healthy, while Poland's economy was still mired in the Depression. Wonder why? Many of German citizens of Danzig had consistently demonstrated their unwavering loyalty to National Socialism and its principles. They'd even elected a National Socialist parliamentary majority before this result had been achieved in Germany. It was widely known that Poland was constantly seeking to increase her control over Danzig, despite the wishes of Danzig's German majority. Hitler was not opposed to Poland's further economic aspirations at Danzig, but but Hitler was resolved never to permit the establishment of a Polish political regime in Danzig. Such a renunciation of Danzig by Hitler would have been a repudiation of the loyalty of the Danzig signature citizens to the German Reich and their spirit of self-determination. Germany presented a proposal for a comprehensive settlement of the Danzig question to Poland on October 24, 1938. Hitler's plan would allow Germany to annex Danzig and construct a superhighway and railroad to East Prussia. In return, Poland would be granted a permanent free port in Danzig and the right to build her own highway and railway to the port. The entire Danzig area would also become a permanent free market for Polish goods on which no German customs duties would be levied. Germany would take the unprecedented step of recognizing and guaranteeing the existing German-Polish frontier, including the boundary in Upper Silesia established in 1922. This latter provision was extremely important since the Versailles Treaty had given Poland much additional territory which Germany proposed to renounce. Hitler's offer to guarantee Poland's frontiers also carried with it a degree of military security that no other non-communist country could match. Germany's proposed settlement with Poland was far less favorable to Germany than the 13 points of the Wilson Program at Versailles. The Versailles Treaty gave Poland large slices of territory in regions such as West Prussia and Western Posen, which were overwhelmingly German. The richest industrial section of Upper Silesia was also given to Poland, despite the fact that Poland had lost the plebiscite there. Germany was willing to renounce these territories in the interest of German-Polish cooperation. This concession of Hitler was more than adequate to compensate for the German annexation of Danzig and the construction of a superhighway and railway in the corridor. The Polish diplomats themselves believed that Germany's proposal was sincere and realistic basis for a permanent agreement. On March 26, 1939, the Polish ambassador to Berlin, Josef Lipski, formally rejected Germany's settlement proposals. The Poles had waited over 5 months to reject Germany's proposals, and they refused to countenance any change in existing conditions. Lipski talked to German Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop and said it was his painful duty to draw attention to the fact that any further pursuance of these German plans, especially where the return of Danzig to the Reich was concerned, meant war with Poland. So, who's threatening war? Poland. excuse me. Poland threatened Germany with partial mobilization of her forces on March 23, 1939. Hundreds of thousands of Polish army reservists were mobilized, and Hitler was warned that Poland would fight to prevent the return of Danzig to Germany. The Poles were surprised to discover that Germany did not take this challenge seriously. Hitler, who deeply desired friendship with Poland, refrained from responding to the Polish threats of war. Germany did not threaten Poland and took no precautionary military measures in response to the German, to the Polish partial mobilization. Hitler regarded a German-Polish agreement as a highly welcome alternative to a German-Polish war. However, no further negotiations for a German-Polish agreement occurred after the British guarantee to Poland because Josef Beck refused to negotiate. Beck ignored repeated German suggestions for further negotiations because Beck knew that Lord Halifax hoped to accomplish the complete destruction of Germany. Halifax, he was the British Foreign Secretary, had considered an Anglo-German war inevitable since 1936, and Britain's anti-German policy was made public by a speech by Neville Chamberlain on March 17, 1939. Halifax discouraged German-Polish negotiations because he was counting on Poland to provide a pretext for war. Now, I'm going to continue that tomorrow, but this is not exactly the history that we've been taught. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here at ResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take a musical break right now. Let's play a little bit of a man who brought the country western song of California to Nashville in the 1960s and 70s. A man from Bakersfield, California. He became so well known, it became sometimes called Bakersfield. Buck Owens.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna live here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna live here again.
singing. Life's gonna lift in again. I hear bees are humming, and I know the days are coming. Life's gonna lift in again. Life's gonna lift in. Life's gonna lift in. Life's gonna lift in. Thank you.
come through. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And best to know your mind until the end of time makes my heart skip a
side of me here on whiteresistanceradio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever, the maple leaf. England dear, the Maple Leaf forever. God save our Queen and heaven bless the Maple Leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the Maple Leaf forever. The Maple Leaf forever. God save our Queen and heaven bless the Maple Leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the Maple Leaf forever. The Maple Leaf, our emblem dear, the Maple Leaf forever. God save our Queen and heaven bless the Maple Leaf forever.